This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Bill Wolf. Bill is the CEO, the Chief Executive Officer of Central Ohio Primary Care Physicians. He's going to talk to us today about his leadership journey, advice for leaders, and more. Dr. Wolf, can you take a second and introduce yourself and tell us also about Central Ohio Primary Care Physicians?
Yeah, thanks, Scott. As you said, my name is Bill Wolf. I'm an internist by training and practiced in the Columbus market for 25 years before moving into administrative management. COPC is a very large physician-owned independent primary care group here in Central Ohio and Franklin and surrounding counties. We are made up of 435 physicians. We've got about 240 primary care, adult primary care physicians, so family medicine or internal medicine, 80 hospitalists, 80 pediatricians, and about 35 specialists. And those specialists are largely endocrinology, PM&R, and infectious disease. We are, as I said, physician-owned. We have about 360 equal shareholders among the 435 current physicians. So that's who we are in Central Ohio.
Fantastic. And what was the early on origins of the group? At what point did the group decide and the physicians getting together decide, we want to try and be an independent, thriving, primary care-driven, multi-specialty group versus becoming employed by health systems versus doing a private equity thing or whatever it might be? What was the early sort of origins of the drive behind this?
Yeah, back in 1994, 95, when the residency hours restriction rules came into effect, we were all teaching physicians at an internal medicine program. And because of those hours, because of the hours restrictions, we were going to have house staff fewer months of the year and not have total coverage for our patients. So really, we came together initially to figure out how we were going to cover each other's patients when they were hospitalized. And in those early meetings, realized that not only did we want to develop a hospitalist program, but that we actually also wanted to own ancillaries. We wanted to get to a common record. We were tired of doing the administrative tasks all individually. So by 1996, 33 of us from 11 separate organizations came together as one tax ID number and have grown from 33 and 11 sites to the 435, 78 locations. Private practice locations here in Central Ohio. We did develop ancillary services, and interestingly, quite frankly, those early ancillary services, of course, were for profit. If we owned the laboratory, if we owned the CAT scanner and the MR, we could bill and collect for those services and increase our physicians' income a bit. As we have moved along in contracting and are in shared savings, and actually for our Medicare Advantage lives, we're at full prepaid capitated risk. Those profit centers are now cost centers, and they just happen to cost less. So that's where we've gone.
Fascinating. So I'm going to ask you a couple questions. I'm going to start with a non-serious question, then I'll quickly move to a serious question. The non-serious question will be, you're in the middle of sort of Ohio State Buckeye country. If a Michigan medicine grad, a great medical school, applies to join your group, do they immediately get put to the bottom of the list because they're a Michigan graduate, or do you allow Michigan grads to join Central Ohio Primary Care?
We do let them join. We mostly have them work nights, and they can never be a shareholder. So we discourage. Interestingly, our counsel is a Michigan grad, and we do have several Michigan grads, and we look at it as a great basketball school.
Exactly. At one time, it was actually a great football school as well. Yep. I know that they have not beaten Ohio State in 8 or 9 years now, much to the chagrin of Coach Harbaugh. It is. The serious question is, how has COVID-19 tested the mettle of your group, or have you been one of these groups that's done okay because you have a lot of capitated business as well? I assume far better than a proceduralist-driven group during COVID-19, but what's the sense of things, and has it tested the mettle, or is it going okay? What's your sense of the COVID-19 impact?
Yeah, it had a significant impact on us, and I'll describe that in a moment, but you're right, the capitated arrangements that we're in and the shared savings that we are owed from 2019 have sustained us, have actually sustained us and put us into a much better position. And I think we'll see more and more independent physicians, and especially primary care, looking to get into either risk or prepaid arrangements, at least primary care cap, but full cap. So I think this type of event, this pandemic, will do that. As far as the effect on us, and it's a little embarrassing, we in February of this year did zero video visits, zero telehealth visits. We planned on rolling out a telehealth utility later in the year. So fortuitously, we'd already expanded our broadband capabilities, and we are on eClinicalWorks, and so we had just taken an upgrade that allowed us to improve our ability to do video visits. So we went from zero video visits in February to 90,000 from March 16th to last week. We were fortunately able to turn on that utility, encourage patients to be seen via video, and at the peak of this, our visits were down by 65%. We were able to get them back to a 75% level, so down only 25%. And we were able to do 75% of those visits by video. So, I would say it was a galvanizing performance by our administrative team and our physicians to turn on that utility, encourage patients, and we learned a lot of communication, learned a lot about communicating both with our physicians and with our patients during that time.
Thank you. And take a moment, Dr. Wolf, and talk about your journey to leadership from being sort of a practicing internal medicine physician to moving truly into leadership of a really large clinic today.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I do believe that all physicians have access to leadership roles. And whether you're leading a junior resident or a team at the hospital, a team at your practice, all physicians have an opportunity to be leaders and to really to experience being led, even as far back as medical school. So my experience really, my leadership experience began in that 94 and 95 time period when we decided to form COPC, and I was involved in as the representative from my practice, my site for that development. I then was involved in board of directors of COPC as we began to grow. I took the medical director role for our corporation in 2007, continued to work part-time as a practicing physician. And then in 2013, our CEO retired, an MBA businessman, did a fantastic job of growing the organization. But at that point, it was time for physician leadership. Most all of our initiatives we're clinically based, and we're around shared savings and PCMH and risk contracting. So it really became time for our organization to be led by a physician. And having been in the medical director role as I had been for 6 years, it somewhat made sense that I take that role.
In a question for you, as a physician leader, how important is it to be both a leader and to keep the ego in check to allow your physicians to, because they're all leaders as well of their own practices, their own patient bases, their own livelihoods. It's how important is it to find this right balance of leadership and keeping ego in check?
Yeah, you know, I think as a physician leader, you start with, and it's a good thing, you start with credibility among other physicians. So you start with a leg up, and if you can build consensus around an opportunity, and for us it was moving to shared savings and risk, and really having doctors believe in the come that it could happen if we performed well. Then we could share in that value we create. And I go all the way back to when I was a medical director. When we first started looking at our data, we realized that our highest performing physicians, those with the best cancer screenings, the most diabetics in control, the most hypertensives in control, when we looked at our data, we realized that our highest performing physicians actually had the lowest income. Because when we bumped that up against their schedule, they were spending the most time with patients. And so it became really clear to us that you just couldn't do primary care fast if you were going to do it well. And so having our physicians believe that we could get them into a contracting situation where they could be paid for things that didn't happen to their patients was a task, but our physicians believed it. And fortunately, that came true, and now our physicians' income, about 30% of our physicians' income is through shared savings and risk, and our physicians now see fewer patients than they did 5 and 6 years ago, and their income is up, and I think they're satisfied.
When you talk to colleagues across the country in primary care, obviously so many of them have ended up joining hospital health systems, in our, to this point, have become very comfortable with it. I mean, but many of them still must look at you with envy that you're able to build an organization around primary care where you still are physician-led and still have physician independence. What are some of those conversations you have with colleagues across the country about your situation? Because you become not quite a unicorn. There's some other great, great, large physician-led groups, but there's less than there used to be. Some of your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, and fortunately, I do think there is still a subset of physicians and primary care physicians also that want to own a business, that want to live in some way in a revenue minus expense world. On the flip side, there are physicians that just want to go to work, pay a salary, meet an RVU criteria, and be paid for that. I think that hospitals are becoming a bit dissatisfied with that model, and we see physicians coming back to us from those models, and again wanting to own a business, again wanting to be in private practice, to set their own schedule. So I think there are advantages to both models. I think that hospital systems, unfortunately, are in a situation where they're paying for downstream revenue creation, and that takes away some of the incentive, I think, for a physician to perform, and not just financially, but maybe even clinically. So, I think both models have advantages for physicians that are interested in the model. I think that as we move towards risk, being in private practice and having that risk and shared savings income go to the physicians creates an opportunity for physicians that is not available in a hospital system employed model.
Fantastic. I mean, what a fascinating evolution of your practice and growth, and congratulations on what you've done, Dr. Wolf. Really, your entire group, what an amazing story, and congratulations. Dr. Wolf, it's a pleasure to have you on today. We'd love to have you on again and talk more about leadership priorities and more, but just fantastic what you've done. 435 physicians, still independent, running a great group, running a profitable group. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much, Scott. I appreciate the opportunity.